Hello and welcome to the Badger Talks podcast, the podcast that shares interviews with experts from the University of Wisconsin-Madison community about their work, research, and a little bit about what they're like as people, too. I'm your host, Buzz Kemper. Today, we're talking about Odyssey Project, a terrific program which offers University of Wisconsin-Madison humanities classes for adult students facing economic barriers to college. The majority of students that participate in the Odyssey course are from racial and ethnic minority groups and are often overcoming the obstacles of single parenthood, homelessness, drug and alcohol addiction, incarceration, depression, and domestic abuse. Odyssey students report transformative outcomes, and some have even moved from homelessness to bachelor's and master's degrees. Students also say that they read more to their children, feel that they are better parents and advocates for their children in school, and have more hope about their own future. In this program, we're exploring how Odyssey has helped students find their voice and be heard. And I'm happy to have as my guests the director of UW Odyssey Project, Emily Auerbach, and Odyssey Project alums, Kina Atkinson and Corey Saffold. Emily, we go back a long ways, and Courage to Write, University of the Air, all these things that we have done over the years, and it's been a while, and I'm so glad to have you back and talk about this, and I'm tempted to refer to it as your new project, but you've been at this for 20 years, right?
Yes, Odyssey is in the 21st year of providing a free college jumpstart course in the humanities for adults facing financial barriers.
Wow.
And we now have grown, you know, we have programs for our alumni, Odyssey Junior and Senior, programs for veterans, and for those in Wisconsin prisons. What I've been able to see over the last two decades is students who were in our early years of the program who have now gone on to advanced degrees, and their children are in our program. So multi-generational impact.
Yeah.
And today we're looking at voice.
Yeah.
The way that Odyssey over those 21 years has helped over 600 alumni and their families find a voice and start using it.
Mm-hmm. And give us before we go to Corey and Kina, give us an overview of how Odyssey started, what the mission is, and just how it fits into these people's lives in such a wonderful way.
As many people know, my parents both came out of poverty because of a free school that gave them a chance.
Mm.
And I'm passionate about providing that access and the encouragement. Sometimes people have gifts they don't even know they have, or their college material, even if they've been literally told you are not college material, made to feel that way. And what we have found is that sometimes even students who start out barely speaking in class, very shy, very unsure of themselves, when they discover they have this power of storytelling, this power of making their life somehow meaningful and connected to others, and they start using it, transformation happens in magical ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love what something that you said in an earlier conversation we had, where you said Odyssey Project isn't giving these people their gifts. The gifts are there. You're just helping them find and unwrap them. And I think that's a really beautiful way to think of it.
And that was a student quote. A student said, Odyssey helped me unwrap my gifts and rewrite the story of my life.
Nice.
And sometimes people come and they don't know they have those gifts inside because life has made them feel otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And Corey and Kina are good examples of that, where I watched as those voices, you know, took shape. And mm-hmm. Now you can't shut them up.
All right. Well, good. I'm glad, because I love doing interviews with people who like to talk about what they're doing in their lives. And so happy to have Corey Saffold with whom we have a little bit of history as
we
well.
We do, yes.
Working with the, what was the ministry called?
It was InterVarsity Christian Fellowship.
Right, okay.
And we did some of our worship music here at Audio for the Arts, and that's kind of where you and I first met. Yes.
Yeah.
Many years ago.
Many
years
ago. Even though we're both still so young.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a wonderful thing. And Kina Atkinson, who I am just meeting now, and it's a delight to have you in here as well. Emily, I think we're going to start with Corey and get his story. So I don't know if you have a specific question or if we should just let him go.
Let him go.
All right.
Sure. You know, as we're talking about voice, right? I think about the power of voice, and you mentioned, Emily mentioned the quote about the student who said that the gift was already inside them, it's just really about unwrapping it and using it.
Yeah.
And I think about the many people that come through the Odyssey Project that have a voice to lend, to give to society, right? All of those voices that you think about that are not being heard, that are on the fringes, that are disenfranchised, that all of those voices that need to project, right? And for the structures and the systems and the power to hear those voices, that's what Odyssey does for each student that comes through that program. And if I can, you know, talk about myself a bit and how it did that for me, I think now about where I am now and where I was in the Odyssey Project, and even I'm amazed. But I know that it all dates back to an editorial that I wrote in the Odyssey Project called Education Must Trump Prison Time. And when I saw that get published in the State Journal, that's when it kind of hit me. It hit me like, you know, pretty profoundly. I thought, like, wow, that's my voice. My voice is being used, and many people are reading that and commenting on that. And that's when I knew, and that's when I felt empowered, right? Mm-hmm. That I have to use my voice to fight against injustice, and I have to use my voice to really bring change to some of the injustices that I was seeing. And I started off by first saying, how could I do that? What would be the best way to implement my voice in a system of that was not just? And that's why I started off by being a police officer. Because I figured being a police officer would be one of the main ways that I could use discretion, because police officers have a lot of discretion, to really impart in someone's life by just showing them a sense of dignity, right? And whatever situations you go through as a police officer, you meet people many times at their worst point, and how you treat them at that point will still show that they are dignified and still adds value to their life. And then you can also hear their voice, right? And so then going into the schools as a police officer is another opportunity to be this buffer between the criminal justice system and the school, right? Many people talk about the school to prison pipeline. Well, we can plug that pipeline. That's what I was, you know, intending to do, trying to fight against all of these disparities and things like that. And so I did that for several years, and I did a stint on the Board of Regents, and I kind of took on the Odyssey passion that Emily was really driving home, that she spoke about right now, which is access to education. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love, absolutely love about the Odyssey Project, is that they remove every barrier, take away every excuse that we had I came to every single class. There was no reason why I wouldn't. There was food there, there was childcare, everything I needed was right there in class. And so just that level of access to education while on the Board of Regents, that's what I was preaching. Like, we need more of the Odyssey Project in all of its forms, whether that be online education, non-traditional, in the evening classes like the Odyssey, or whatever other childcare, whatever other programs we could find, right? So really being an advocate for and champion access to education, and then to now being in law school. But finding that voice has really lit a fire under me. It's lit a fire under me in a way that I don't even understand or can't quite comprehend. But the trajectory of my life and where I'm going and what I plan to be and how I plan to advocate for people that can't advocate for themselves, how I plan to stand up. I just look forward to where I'm going with that. But that's just to speak. It's not necessarily about me, but it's a testament to the Odyssey Project and how they can light that spark under you so that you can really advocate for other people and fight against injustice in many ways. So.
Terrific.
I'll shut up and let...
Oh, yeah, no problem. That's great, great information. And so we're talking about the Odyssey Project, and the voice you're hearing now is Corey Saffold. And because we're talking about voices and you finding your voice, you mentioned that op-ed that you wrote. Can you read us part of that and tell us what happened afterwards? Because Supreme Court Justice Shirley Abramson read this, and it caused some waves in a good way. So
it did.
Let's hear your piece.
Sure, I'll read a few paragraphs, an excerpt from my piece. In light of the ever-increasing incarceration rate among Black men in Wisconsin, it is imperative for Black men to graduate from high school. According to the National Center for Education, Black students who do not graduate from high school are significantly more likely to end up in prison. Why not pay more attention to educating our youth in order to prevent the likelihood of prison? Our country spends more of its time, money, and resources on figuring out ways to contain and lock up people of color than on investing in families and the homes they come from. How can Wisconsin take pride in being progressive while having such high rates of teen incarceration, and Black male high school dropouts? It's time to make Wisconsin a state where everyone progresses.
Terrific. And did you hear from Justice Abramson after that?
I did. Mm-hmm. She it was very interesting. She commented on it because there's a part in here where I talk about justice is not blind, as the symbol of Lady Justice would suggest. Mm. She hands out verdicts of guilty to the poor while receiving bribes to free the rich. She disproportionately locks up Blacks while simply giving white criminals a slap on the wrist.
Mm.
So she interestingly kind of twisted that in a very brilliant way. And the part that says justice is not blind, she said, well, maybe justice is blind. And maybe that's why we have a lot of these problems, because we have to help justice see. And I thought that was pretty profound. Yeah. So she commented on that.
She spoke at our graduation.
Yeah.
Oh, terrific.
When Corey's class, the class of 2006, graduated, she was our speaker.
Yep.
And she turned to him and said, more or less, you got that right, and we need to do better.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Terrific. Yep. Yep. Corey Saffold, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's great. And I think I'm going to have some follow-up questions.
Sure.
But I want to turn to Keena Atkinson. And hi.
Hello.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And so let's hear your story. How did you find the Odyssey Project, and what has it meant in your life in terms of changing direction and unwrapping your gifts?
So I applied to Odyssey Project while I was homeless. Mm. I was sleeping in my friend's barbershop after hours on the bathroom floor because that was where the heat was. I was depressed. I had just gotten out of a domestic violence relationship, and I had a 4-year-old son at the time. Mm. So if you can imagine what my mental state was at that time, I was extremely depressed and hopeless.
Wow.
And so my friend, who was letting me sleep at his barbershop at night, he came to me and said, I think you should apply for this program. He was an alumni of the program.
Okay.
So when the applications open, he really encouraged me to sign up. And, you know, I can only tell you these things because I still kept a journal during that time. I still keep a journal, but I had a journal even when I was depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And so looking back at the journal, it was like my thoughts were, why would anybody accept me? Who would even want me?
Mm.
You know, I just felt there was no seeing tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, here I am today.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, I made it to tomorrow. Right. And so he encouraged me to apply. And then I applied. I went to go and interview at the bookstore with Emily. Even in the application process, right now, there's a lot of things I do right now. One of the things I do is I coach. Part of my coaching program is this, I tell people there's transformation in the transaction, right? Mm-hmm. So even in the process of me speaking to Emily and professing to her things, qualities and characteristics about who I am,
mm-hmm.
even that process, like, put life back into me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when I told her about how much I used to read all the time, and I used to write, little series, and personally, like, no one ever read them, but I just personally used to write stories. It woke something up inside of me that had been, like, shriveled up, you know, due to emotional and physical abuse. So I got accepted into the program. I was still homeless when I got accepted. I wrote a poem. The poem will talk about my story and the poem that I'll share with you all, but I was homeless when I was accepted, and then my life started to turn around just by that first step, applying to the program. Then, okay, we're moving forward. I'm accepted in a college program.
Yeah.
I got accepted into housing. I went through the program. By the time we were near done, I was like, oh my gosh, I love this education. I am on a forward path. I don't want this to end. I don't want this to stop. So I applied for cosmetology school. I went to cosmetology school. that was a good way for me to provide for my child and have the flexibility to be present. So I went to get then my associate's degree at Madison College, my bachelor's degree in psychology at UW-Madison. I applied twice. I like to tell people I applied two times for UW-Madison. And then I went into a career in executive leadership. I went on to start my own wellness company where I teach dance, I teach yoga, I do transformative life coaching for domestic violence survivors, nutrition, hormonal health. Those are all things that I work with people on and more. I'm a landlord now. I was homeless in 2008. And then, or 2009, and then 10 years later, I was providing housing to people. I closed on my multifamily property, and now I provide housing to people, you know, so.
That's amazing. So before I have you ask you to read your poem, you talked about, and this came up in our other Odyssey interview, too, about courage. This came up there, too. You mentioned the low self-image, you know, mm-hmm. Why would anybody accept me? Why would anybody want me? Now, obviously, once you got involved with the Odyssey Project, that helped you tremendously. But you had to get from the barbershop floor to the Odyssey Project. So how did you overcome those feelings of inadequacy enough so that you were able to say, I'm going to try this. I'm going to give this a shot.
The feelings were there. Okay. I still felt inadequate.
Okay.
It took a long, long time and years of therapy for me to get through the inadequacy, but it was more so trusting the process, putting one foot in front of the other. And really, like, that's really what it was. Like, and that's the truth.
Yeah.
You know, like, it took a long time to overcome self-esteem, self-worth, self-love, to figure out what those things were, but major part of that was finding my voice.
Terrific. And that's a perfect lead into the poem. Would you read us read us your piece?
So this poem is called Rich Poor Woman, and and like I said, this is my life. This is a part of my life story. My story is complex, but this is a part of it.
Okay.
Rich Poor Woman. Rich is better than poor until the cost to be rich is paid in intoxicated blows to my teenage body. Kicks and fists delivered by the father of my child, soaked in alcohol and rage. Pleas and screams for help absorbed and unanswered. Hopeless tears landing on eggshells that I didn't tiptoe on gently enough. Leave? I can't leave. That's impossible. No longer was I his girlfriend. I'd become his property. Leaving was never an option. I never imagined a life outside of stable and unpredictable abuse. As a little girl, we snuck out in the middle of the night, leaving everything, including the state we lived in, to escape my abusive father. And there I was just years later in the same cycle with my own child this time. Rich is better than poor when starting over is a myth. If I leave him, he will find me and kill me. There is nowhere to hide, nowhere to go. Being rich seemed better when I was poor in my self-esteem, poor in my self-worth, poor in my understanding of love. When I left him, I had nothing. No money, no plan, and eventually no home. Just me and my toddler, starting over with nothing but freedom. I was poor, but for the first time, I felt rich. Dinners at the soup kitchen, showers in a gym, writing again, exploring hobbies and talents, laughing without guilt, smiling without fear. None of that cost me a dime. And as a poor woman, free was within my budget. Having say-so over my body every day, poor in my pockets, rich in my joy. Don't pity me because I am now happy and free. Either I was brave enough to leave or I had nothing else to lose. Facing the unknown and starting over from scratch. growing in confidence, creativity, and boldness. Every time the sun rises on my skin and every time I go to sleep without worrying about that drunken boogeyman stumbling through my front door, I know I made the right choice to start over and be poor. Everything in life comes with a sacrifice, a side effect, or cost, and breaking this cycle of abuse was my choice. Poor isn't my name, and it doesn't define me. Poor happens to be a side effect of generations of domestic abuse, untreated mental health issues turned into substance abuse, my single mother doing the best she could to raise her daughters alone with few resources, not being able to teach us something she didn't know herself, and me not being able to fix something that I didn't even know was wrong. Rich is better than poor, but poor is one of the side effects of a bigger, deeper issue that started generations ago. I'm just working relentlessly to break free from the cycles. In this journey of growth, knowledge, and purpose, I have become a rich, poor woman knowing no limits. I am a rich, poor woman breaking cycles and chains.
Okay, I need a minute. I can't follow that. But wow, that you had to dig deep to get all those thoughts and feelings on paper. Yeah, thank you.
That's just one of many powerful poems that she's written and delivered, and that son that slept with her on the barbershop floor mm-hmm. is now in college.
Mm-hmm. Really?
He is. Yeah. He'll be 20 next month.
Wow. Oh, that's amazing.
Sophomore
amazing.
Year
wow.
at UW Whitewater. Mm-hmm.
Terrific. Studying what?
He doesn't know yet.
Doesn't know yet. That's okay. He Time to know. Decide.
He's still figuring it out.
And where are you at now? You talked about your dance, you're teaching yoga. You talked about cosmetology school. What does your life consist of now?
So currently I have a wellness company called Ruji Wellness.
Okay.
And through the wellness company, I have an annual retreat that I host annually. So mm-hmm. this will be the second year. I've hosted the wellness retreat. I teach yoga, mindfulness, social emotional learning to children and adults. I have quite a curriculum that I wrote and that I get to teach.
Great.
It's a 12-week mindfulness program, and then it's followed by 14 weeks of dance.
Okay.
And then that's for the children. And a lot of times people are like, when should my children start getting into yoga and mindfulness? And I'm like, in utero.
Yeah, right.
You know, because they're taking on the stress from their mother. And so, you know, so the classes that I created, my son and I, my youngest child and I, created this class called Koga Yoga. Mm-hmm. Coaching, like I said, I have a coaching program for women who are domestic violence survivors to help them create a loving relationship with oneself, mm-hmm. as well as parenting, nutrition. Just yesterday, I taught after school club at the middle school. I have two after school middle school programs that I do for middle schoolers with nutrition and mindfulness. And the youth be really into it. And I partner with different organizations to bring affordable wellness programming. Most of the time it's free to the people who come because these are the communities who need it the most but don't necessarily have the funds to access it.
Okay.
So
when she got her UW bachelor's degree, the UW did a big billboard about her, and it said,
"Oh wow!"
for the whole Dane County thing, and it said, "Woman on an Odyssey." And there's Tina's big picture up on the highway.
And I want to sign up for your yoga classes. I used to do it regularly, and I've fallen off the wagon. Just quickly, we got just a tiny bit of time left, and I just want to ask both of you. You both have so much going on, but what do you do for fun? Kina, start with you. What if you're not writing and working on all this stuff and doing your cosmetology and your wellness, do you have a hobby, or are you just exhausted and go to sleep?
No, I'm not exhausted. I have a very nice balance in my days, but my son and I have a son who is 9.
Okay.
We end up playing most of the time, so we play.
Okay.
I do rest. I love to read. I have a book club that I host.
Oh, terrific.
Okay. And I like to write. You said, like, not writing, but writing is, like, one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah.
And I like to eat.
Okay.
So, you know, that's a really fun
thing. I do
too.
I do it every day.
Yes. And it's something like that I've recently been prioritizing, having a regular eating schedule. That sounds crazy, but a lot of people don't eat all the time.
I know. Corey, what about you? What's your relaxing time like?
Yeah. So I'm a musician.
Oh, yeah.
So I play, well, yeah, you know.
I do.
I play bass guitar. And so I play in a band here in town called Kinfolk.
Yeah.
And we play R&B music around town at different events and also play at churches. So it's really a different, it kind of gets me away from always having to stand up for something to just being able to relax and just enjoy music and just kind of sit in that mode. So, yeah, that's what I
do. Yeah, terrific. Yeah. And, of course, I knew that, but I wanted the audience to hear it from you. So that is terrific. Corey Saffold and Keena Atkinson, thank you so much for sharing your stories. And Emily Auerbach, thank you for being here and for all the work that you've done to make this happen and help transform these lives. It's you're terrific human beings. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to the Badger Talks podcast. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with director of UW Odyssey Project Emily Auerbach and Odyssey Project alumni Keena Atkinson and Corey Saffold. Please browse our previous episodes for other topics that may be of interest to you. The Badger Talks podcast is a creation of UW Connects and produced at Audio for the Arts Recording Studio in Madison, Wisconsin. Our music is composed by Julian Olson and performed by the UW Marching Band. I'm Buzz Kemper. Thank you for listening.